for her people.
Yeah, yeah, she is wonderful. Thank you so much, Helena, and thank you, Jade and Summer and Lainey. I'm Esti Dinor. We'll be talking again next week. Bye bye. Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you can.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. The sugar and spice. I feel nice. The sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got a year.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Thank you very much. Hey, I had my first Trump dream.
Oh no!
Hopefully my only Trump dream. It was weird. I think it was like a testimony to his ubiquity at this point in time, that because I've never dreamt about him before. But in my dream, it wasn't anything special. He was just that was the thing. That was what was frightening about it. He was just like there.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And he asked me if I wanted his autograph, and I said I thought about it. I thought, well, yeah, all right, whatever. So I said, how about a napkin? So he said, all right. So I gave him a napkin. He signed his name.
A McDonald's napkin.
It did have a little bit of barbecue sauce on it, I think. I don't know what that maybe people can interpret that for me. I don't know what that means. But anyway, it was weird. It was just kind of like I've never, as long as that guy's been around, never had a dream about him.
Yeah.
Now, I've dreamt about, like, ex-presidents. Like, I had a dream about Jimmy Carter one time.
Yeah.
Dream about Al Gore, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
But never had a dream about Trump. And now, and it was so banal. That was the thing. It was just kind of like, yeah, you want my autograph. I think I may have even called him Mr. President. I don't know. I was just trying to be nice, trying to be polite, whatever.
Yeah.
It was weird. I think my subconscious is acquiesced or something. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Just get used to it.
To close my eyes stage of this.
Whatever.
So, I don't know. I swing back and forth. The pendulum, the emotional pendulum swings in my cranium there, and some days it's like, oh, this won't, you know, this is gonna turn out okay, and other days it's like, oh god, this is the end of the world.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we literally, all the informational channels that we could use to make predictions are all flawed in various ways. So I mean, you know, there's 15 different zillion different polls out there about what this, that, and the other. People lie in polls. They don't tell, you know, they're not saying what they're going to do at the last minute. Nobody really knows what they think, it seems like, at least some subset.
Well, even the polls, I mean, they're, you know, 8-10 years ago, polls had when you said there's a presidential poll, there was, you know, I mean, some were more biased. Rasmussen tended to skew
to
the right and things like that. But they were still done by people who know what they're doing, who had some sort of methodology and standards.
Right.
But now it's just all clicks.
Yeah.
And so somebody does a quickie half-ass poll, and then they put a big headline out saying, you know, this is going to happen, or this is, you know.
Not like in the old days when we used all of our ass.
Yeah. So now there are, you know, 10 times as many polls, but a lot of them are just junk science.
Right.
So you don't know what to think. And then you get kind of that second layer where this kind of came up around, like, you know, with the 538.com and stuff. They started doing kind of composites of the polls to try to get a better feel for things. It's like, if we combine all these things and use some kind of methodology, this might give us a better result. But now you can't do that, because it's like those Wapatuli parties in college, where everybody would bring some booze and pour it into a big, you know, big container, and then you'd see what you end up with.
Well,
you end up sick is what you end up with.
Going back to what you were saying before, it's like the subprime loan scandal. I mean, like, if every piece of something that you're buying as a security is larded with crap, then when the crap is discovered, every one of those loans is going to be bad, right? So it's like you've got a little fleck of bad polling, yeah. Animus, bad methodology, right, bias,
right.
And so on.
Right.
In each little one, then you don't know what to do with when you aggregate them.
And some of these aren't even, it isn't just that they're being, taking shortcuts or being lazy or you're just throwing something out there, real quick and dirty. Sometimes it's malicious. I mean, they want to get a certain result.
Right.
And then, because they want to get that out there saying, this is going
to happen.
They're
trying to manipulate the
dialogue. You try to manipulate and you try to, it's like, oh, there's no sense in you voting because look at it. It's a 20%.
Motivating, demotivating.
20% difference.
It's just like everything else. I mean, it's just like there's an information glut. There's an information overload. And it basically creates a sense of helplessness. I mean, you don't know what to use as data for making decisions. I mean, the idea that they're evenly split is like, I mean, it's either on or off. I mean, that's what statisticians try to avoid, right? But that seems to be the best information we have. It is a flip of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts people in a state of mind, I think, it's pretty uneasy. I mean, they've done studies about, people would rather like take an electrical shock than wait for something.
Yeah.
Especially if it's something important. So you had this kind of like learned helplessness because of the informational overload. You really don't have the time. And there have been studies on this too. I mean, the whole paradox of choice. If you have 3 choices, you can be rational. If you have 87 choices, you just lunge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you have 87 different versions of something, because it's like, well, the one with the shiny label is the one that they'll take.
Yeah,
because
walk down the cereal aisle someday.
Yeah, no human can actually and would even try to assimilate and integrate that
like
much
a rational decision. Over.
Yeah, rational decision making is out the window. So just keep throwing the crap at them.
Well, there was a story this week that came out that and I don't know how well sourced it was, but it said that it was a former model, swimsuit model, who said Trump had groped her, and then Jeffrey Epstein was involved somehow too, or some sick game.
There's another one that was ubiquitous.
Yeah. And but it barely made a ripple. I mean, that's the kind of thing that would have been disastrous to any campaign in the past.
Well, I got a rundown of some of the things he said this week. He threatened to revoke broadcast licenses of TV. Especially TV broadcasts that, like, CNN or CBS and so on, that didn't conform to his view of reality. He's talked about, this.
He's talked about it with places like CNN and even Fox when he gets mad at them. But those places don't have broadcast licenses, but he apparently doesn't know that.
Well, so. I didn't either.
Yeah. Well, they're on cable.
Cable, of course. Yeah. But CBS would be the most obvious one for him. He also, of course, floated this idea of having a Social Security benefits be non-taxable, but of course that would be the fastest way to end Social Security because, I mean, the taxes are part of what pays for Social Security. So. He's also said he wants to dump the income tax.
Yeah, he floated that.
Yeah, there's another one.
Well, this is kind of the end game where it's just, I'm just going to say a bunch of stuff and hope nobody's paying attention. And
the thing is, he has such verbal diarrhea as it is. I mean, how can you actually, you got to give him cred on this. I mean, how could you amplify the flow any more than it already is?
That's why he doesn't like the low flow toilets and the low flow showers. I can do better than that.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
Well, there's also the Hitler stuff, I mean, again,
We're not even talking about the Hitler stuff. That's just like, we expected that one.
I need more generals like Hitler.
Strong man, tall man.
I love that.
Tears in his eyes.
Kelly explained it.
Giant penis.
You know that Hitler's generals tried to kill him 3 times.
I know.
But he didn't believe him.
He said it's not true.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't believe that?
No, he didn't believe it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there you go. That irritates me more than anything else. That's the last straw. I mean, that's well documented. It's
right.
Not like some made up thing, right? Oh, man. He had them executed.
But you're starting to see this from other candidates, too, kind of floating. Usually it's like the smaller, like a mayor or something saying, Hitler had some pretty good ideas. And, it's the old, he went too far. Because he had a good idea at the end there when he killed himself.
That's the standard joke. I've heard this joke before.
He doesn't get enough credit for that.
He did one good thing. He killed Hitler. Yeah.
He should get more credit for that.
Yeah, I think so.
Other than that,
okay. So I, my mother's father was a German immigrant, and he literally said that to me one time, and it was so funny because my mother and my aunt both said, you know, you can always believe Daddy when he talks about, you know, how far is it from here to the sun or something like that,
right?
Know? Right. But don't get him started on Germany. And sure enough, but the problem was by the time he like confided into me his ideas about Germany, he realized I was not the person. I must have been like 20 or something. Yeah. And we were visiting my mother's family from Kentucky. And he said something about, you know, Hitler had some ideas, the good ideas at the beginning. And I was like, which one? Was it the concentration camps or the Jew killing that you liked better? Oh, man, he shut up pretty fast. So. Oh, Lord.
Well, Americans are split on, this is sad, split on the idea of putting immigrants in militarized camps.
So that's the first part of the Hitler thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's about 47% of the people thought that was a pretty good idea. About 78% of Republicans thought that was a good idea. Yeah. You know, and
wow.
See, white Catholics, 61% approved.
White Catholics,
white mainline Protestants, 58%.
Wow,
Hispanic Catholic, 33%. I mean,
pulling up that ladder, baby.
Yeah. I get it.
This is happening to all of the major nations of the world right now, and even to nations that aren't doing too well economically. I mean, people in Dominican Republic don't want people from Haiti coming in either. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's everyone is feeling very, very rattled about the implications of globalization. You know, I can remember being part of a conference on globalization back in the early 2000s. People are like, well, what will globalization bring us? And of course, the problem is it doesn't bring us more understanding. It brings us irritating other people. You know?
Well, more scapegoats.
Well, yeah, more scapegoats. But I mean, it's just like the movement of goods and services and people around the globe has created a giant blowback in lots of places, not just in the developed West. But I mean, so I get the irritation and I get the hesitancy, the cultural conservatism and everything. But this kind of stuff is just beyond the pale. If you were really serious about, okay, what should an immigration policy look like? That's one thing. But that's not what this is.
No,
this is not that at all.
No, this is
you know why the milk went sour? Immigrants. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like what?
I thought it was the Jews.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, just take one out, put one in. Yeah. Just fill in the blank. Yeah. No, I just kind of like, it's not a serious conversation.
No, it's not. I mean, because and I'm not saying they can't do it or won't do it, but taking 20 million people who are a vital part of our economy.
Yeah, but that's the other thing.
And you know, locking them up in concentration camps and then expelling them to some country that they may or may not have any connection to.
Right.
It's just ridiculous and it's cruel.
I had that experience a few years ago when a companion and I were down in Brazil. I met a couple of guys on the street. One guy was just like sleeping on the beach. And he spoke perfect English, and I was kind of like, hey, what's going on? Because he was begging, you know. And so because he spoke English, we had a nice conversation. And, you know, this guy's sleeping on the beach. Somebody tried to set his blanket on fire one time, he told me. And, you know, I don't ask questions. If somebody's begging, I just give him money, you know, because I just feel like it's not my job to judge anything.
Yeah.
But this guy, it was kind of interesting because when I gave him some money, because he asked for some money, and I said, here. And then he felt like I gave him a lot. So, I mean, for a person that's begging.
Yeah.
And so then it was kind of like he wanted to help me, you know, like, I'm going to tell you some of the scams that are going on here in Rio, you know, so you won't get fall for him and stuff. He was a very nice man. But the thing about it was he obviously was busted for drugs in probably in Florida. And they sent him back to, quote, his country of origin, which was not he didn't grow up there. He spoke perfect English with no inflection whatsoever, no other accent or anything. So it was obvious it was a drug thing. And there was another guy who was he was basically a kind of a pimp that was working outside of the hotel. He was handing out little pamphlets. And to, you know,
find an entrepreneur.
Yeah, he was. And he handled the pamphlets and he said, would you like to know where to find the ladies? And I said, what if I don't want to find the ladies? And he said, well, I've got a pamphlet for you, too. Yeah, he was an entrepreneur.
I told you.
But then I got talking, Alejandro was his name, I got talking with him. And I was kind of like, so what's your deal? And I noticed on a hot summer day, he had his long sleeve shirt on.
Oh.
And I thought, probably some track marks.
Sure.
And, you know, he spoke, again, perfect English. And it was somebody just deported him because of a drug violation and he was of age. I mean, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So you look at stuff like that and you're like, these boys, basically boys, they're in their 20s. Are trying to like live on the street, because somebody in the U.S. decided, you know, that's where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a microcosm, but it just hit me at the time of how ridiculous that way of thinking is.
Well, Vance was even, you know, he was doing some interview about it, and they asked him for, you know, depressed him a little bit. And and he said, we could look at people who are here legally, too, through, you know.
They're obviously, that's when they say stuff like that, it's immediately like, okay, I know what this is now. This has nothing to do with the practicalities of borders and immigration. It has to do with those people like that are the menace.
Yeah, because he was talking about the people who were here for you know, the DACAs and even people who were born here. You know,
the one thing you can rely on for people throughout human history is two things they'll always do: slavery, disguised or open, and human sacrifice, disguised or open. Like, if we just get rid of enough of the right people, everything will be great.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do. And half the people think, okay, yeah, maybe. E pluribus pluribus.
E pluribus mine. Get your own.
Oh, dear. 17 million people have cast their vote early. But we're not sure what that means, because despite the fact that the Republicans have been saying that the voting machinery is messed up and there's, you know, space aliens or Jewish space aliens are behind it and so on, Republicans are voting early, too. Primarily because a lot of Republican voters are older, and this is a little easier for folks than having to wait at the polls and deal with a lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in Pennsylvania, they've been trying to keep track of this, and they think that so far in Pennsylvania, about 600,000 Democrats have probably turned in their ballots, compared to about half as many Republicans. But the Republicans are catching up, apparently. And
well, they've spent a decade, you know, demonizing early voting and stuff. Yeah. So now they have to do this turnaround because they realize it's a valuable way to get people to the polls.
Right. Yeah, I was always surprised that they didn't like that because, again, they often skew older in terms of their voting base. So. But anyway, so yeah,
it was new, and we fear change,
especially spare change. Hey, the guy that was accused of targeting Trump, you know, on the golf course there down at Valhalla, the lawyers for him, this guy's name you may remember is Ryan Ruth, and the lawyers are asking that the judge in the case be to step aside. They say that this judge has an appearance of partiality. Can you guess what judge it is?
Eileen Cannon.
Very good. Ding, ding, ding. All right. And you win the yacht and the... Yeah. Anyway.
I'm sorry. Supreme Court Justice Eileen Cannon.
Yeah, just wait.
Future.
They said that she's repeatedly praised the president during her rulings in separate criminal cases. And, of course, she's also said that the case against him for illegally holding documents, classified documents, which is right on
the
books.
It's a very flimsy case.
Very, very obvious thing. That should be dismissed, of course. So, in their latest filing, Mr. Ruth...
But they were in a secure location because they were in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And knowing what we know about Trump now, I don't think anybody's going to go in those bathrooms.
Yeah, probably. You know?
probably is the safest place to hide things.
Yeah, back in the day, you'd have magazines by the toilet. Now you have secret documents. In their latest filing...
Oh, look what Israel's got.
Mr. Ruth's lawyer suggested there was even more reason than just the previous stuff for Judge Cannon to be removed. That's because of an ABC report that came out this week, on Tuesday, in fact. The report said the judge's name had appeared, and this is what you're talking about, on an internal Trump campaign document listing potential staffing choices for legal jobs in places like the Justice Department and the White House Counsel's Office.
Wow.
So maybe not the Supreme Court. That would even Trump probably wouldn't try that. But definitely to work with him to subvert the judicial and legal system of the United States. That apparently she's up for.
Yeah. So. She should hold out for the Supreme Court.
She should,
because that's a lifetime appointment.
Yeah,
you know, if you're attorney general, I mean, a Trump attorney general's probably got a half life.
She'll get it in Trump's third term. So,
well, I'm going to say that's got a half life of 6 months or so until they stab you in the back. But
did you hear? Oh my gosh, poor Rudy. Rudy was in the news. This is what it's like to work for Trump, right? Rudy has been ordered to forfeit millions of dollars in assets to those workers, those election workers that he defamed.
Oh, right.
Down in Georgia. And he's got 7 days. That was the middle of the week, 7 days to make the transfer. And he has to liquidate his New York apartment, his vintage Mercedes, which once belonged to Lauren Bacall, of all things.
The judge was John Voight.
The judge ordered him to turn over furniture, his television set, sports memorabilia, jewelry, and 26 watches, including one that Rudy Giuliani said his grandfather gave him. According to Judge Louis J. Lyman of the Federal District Court in Manhattan, where they get it done, he said the watch may be distinctive to defend it as an item of sentimental value, but it is not distinctive to the law. Ooh, cold. So here's this guy that's just, he's just the fall guy, right? I mean, it's just like, it's like some kind of mob movie or something. Like, this guy is the stool pigeon kind of,
right,
like, you know.
Right.
So he's the fall guy, and Trump walks away unscathed, and this poor moron who was doing the Don's work for him, he basically has to give up his grandfather's watch. So, and his TV set, for God's
his
sake.
His TV.
All things.
Well, remember during the bankruptcy, the discovery stage, whatever they call it, he had billed Trump like a couple $1 million or something that was still outstanding.
Never going
to
see that.
Oh, and Rudy went to Mar-a-Lago to ask him to pay it.
Yeah,
and I think he got a free pass to the omelet bar.
Here, and that's the one without the sneeze guard.
Show him this card. Yeah. I'll take care of you.
maybe you got one of those Trump images, you know.
Maybe an NFT.
NFT,
A pair of sneakers if he's lucky, or a Bible. So the Washington Post announced today they will not endorse anyone for the White House.
The Washington Post?
The Washington Post.
Who is it owned by?
Bezos.
Yeah, of course.
Well, he it wasn't too long ago, a year and a half ago, he brought in a new editor-in-chief. It was a guy who had a background working with a lot of conservative organizations. He worked in England. He was associated with the Tories, and he was associated with the Wall Street Journal, and they brought him in to so that the Post could work a little friendlier with some of the more conservative elements of Bezos has a lot of government contracts. So yeah. You don't want to.
Well, there's another billionaire that did the same exact thing in L.A. I don't know if you heard about that. I mean, so
the L.A. Times?
A billionaire, Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, he had purchased the L.A. Times and decided this month that the newspaper would not make any endorsement. Mm-hmm. And he didn't explain why. He didn't just, they just said, well, I'm not
going to. Their editor quit there.
And he did. Yeah. The editor just said, nope,
disgusted.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Yeah. So, it really is disgusting to see, especially the Washington Post, to see how far they have fallen on that. I mean, this is a very important election. But, you know, whatever you think of it, it's incredibly important, and it's a turning point for our country if it goes one way or the other. Yeah. And to stand on the sidelines like that, and try to weasel out of it by saying, we're going to go back to our history of not endorsing it.
We know it's important because the time machine travelers, two of them have tried to do something to Trump and it didn't work. That's always the sign. Somebody came back in time and it didn't work out.
Yeah,
right?
The thing about I'm not sure the second one, I don't know if it qualifies as assassination attempt or it's just a weirdo, but the first one obviously was.
Yeah, of course.
But nobody really, it didn't really register with people. No. It wasn't like, oh my God, this is terrible, and you know, there wasn't any kind of sympathy or anything. It was just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And he missed, huh? Trump went back there for a rally. a week or two ago, and I was wishing I could have been in the crowd there, because I would have held up a sign saying, "We missed you."
Yeah. I saw an interview with Maggie Haberman, who's been following the ex-president for years, where she was talking about how she really thinks that assassination attempt made a big difference to Trump.
Yeah.
Even though everybody else kind of thought, well, you know, why did it take them so long? But, you know, that's kind of like, the assassination attempt has changed his mentality. I also want to go back just to this whole thing of like, well, we're all waiting for the election. That's not going to be the end of it. There's going to be a battle in the courts for ages.
No.
And they're going to do everything they can to mess with the vote. I mean, it's not going to, even this waiting itself is excruciating.
Yeah.
But for the election, when it finally comes, It's going to be this big smeary mess that's going to last for weeks, if not months.
Right. Well, Kamala Harris this week said what a lot of people already know, is that at some point in the evening, Trump is going to declare victory.
Yeah.
And then the messiness starts, where then they try to drag it into the House or the courts and try to get in through the back door.
The thing is they'll do is the same thing that George W. Bush's people did back in 2000, is by declaring victory, then they create basically the burden of proof
They've
on the other
ground,
side. Yeah, the burden of proof on the other side. Now show me I'm wrong. And, you know, if I were Kamala Harris, I would say 2 seconds after the polls close, I won.
That was easy.
That was easy. Yeah, easy peasy. I'm happy as I can be. Ha ha ha. She's good at that. You know, here's the thing. I know people say, well, that's not right, that's not fair. But I just get to the place, and I think we all feel this way, where tired of being Mr. Nice Guy. You know, it's like, all the tricks, all the crazy, and the billionaires. You don't think the billionaires count? The billionaires are, think about this, how much influence that those guys are having. I mean, you probably saw that thing where the Justice Department was saying to warning one of the billionaires that he better knock it off in terms of paying for votes.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is the minute, of course, the Trump got elected, that would be out the door as well.
Well, also stories came out this week that Musk has been hanging around Putin quite a bit. They've met quite a few times over the last couple of years. And so there's a direct pipeline.
They love those manly men, don't they? Hey, Putin was in the news this week. I don't know if you saw that, but he was having a big big meeting at Moscow this week. He had the leader of China, the president of China, the prime minister of India, and the prime minister of South Africa were all there. And he can't travel abroad, so he's got to bring people there. Do you know why he can't travel abroad?
He's a war criminal?
Yeah, he's a war criminal. Yeah, very good. Excellent. That's two for two. So it was Xi Jinping and Narendra Modi. And who is there from South Africa? Who's the president of South Africa now? I said prime minister, but it's the president. I can't remember his name now. Somebody call in and tell me who the president of South Africa is. I feel very stupid right now. Anyway, he was there as well.
Okay.
So he's trying to find this, create this group called BRICS. BRICS is the acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And so he's trying to create his own bloc, basically.
Well, then Putin he can has. Go more places.
Yeah, he's using these BRICS to make a bloc.
Yeah.
Seems synonymous to me. But they wants to include some other nations. He's thinking Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. If you got that group together, that'd be about half the world's population and approximately a little over a third of the global economic output, if you adjust it by purchasing power.
So, President of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa.
Oh, Ramaphosa. Yeah. Yep. That's dumb. I'm sorry. I didn't remember that. Yeah, they have a weird system in South Africa, or an unusual system, I should say, is that in other countries, you know, you have a president, you have a prime minister, if you have a parliamentary system. But they have a parliamentary system, and basically they just skip the whole extra guy thing.
Yeah.
So your party comes in, and in another system you'd become the prime minister, but in that system you just become the president. So the president actually is part of the parliament too, which is interesting.
Hmm.
So he just kind of waltzes in whenever he feels like it, apparently. They don't have the whole separation thing.
Yeah, see, we've got an interesting system where we let land vote for some reason.
Yeah, I know.
The more acres of corn you plant, the more votes you get.
Yeah, the farther apart the people are, the more their votes count. That's our rule here.
It's sort of like the gravity, the inverse relationship.
Exactly. Not influenced by others. Yeah. By the way, when you're thinking about who could be stoking unrest during that post-election crazy, people right now are saying that it could well be Russia. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency all raised warnings that the Russians could get involved very heavily during that period after the election, when you know everything's going to be pretty crazy.
Well, there were also concerns from some official agencies like that the recent disinformation related to the hurricanes was at least amplified by the Russians.
Sure.
Bots and things like that. So
Doesn't you feel terrible to think that there's a whole country out there that thinks we're a bunch of moronic rubes? You know?
the Democrats have a hurricane machine. Well, of course they do. I saw it on Facebook.
So, and America's favorite drag queen, Marjorie Taylor Greene, is leading the way.
Here's an endorsement, though. Washington Post won't endorse, but the Insane Clown Posse has endorsed Kamala Harris.
Okay, finally.
So Juggalos for Harris, Juggalos apparently.
For Harris, Oh, another thing that the former president said this week that you probably saw is that he would fire Jack Smith within seconds of taking office.
Yeah. He's going to do a lot on that first day. Of course, he'll be a dictator just for that one day.
But things
will be pretty.
That's a lot of seconds in that day.
Got to build in some executive time.
Right.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here at WRT 89.9 FM. And you might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org. Could be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page. And thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you can listen to this little show via pod through Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever you get your pods. And and just want to encourage you to get the WRT app. It's very handy and it's free. So
great.
It makes listening to things a lot easier. Listen to the archives. It's a snap to zip through the archives and find our show, which is all I listen to over and over and over again.
Really?
No, I never listen to her. I can't stand to listen to it.
Oh, really?
Myself.
Oh, so. Really? That's sad.
I'm sick of myself. Do you ever get to the point where you're just sick of yourself?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, God, I just can't stand myself anymore. I wish I would leave. You know, it's like, how long is this guy going to hang around me? I'm just...
Well, I want to say this, and I want this as part of the public record going out over the airwaves. I think you have a lovely voice.
Okay.
When I listen to you and I listen to it, you have a nice mellow intonation and, you know, your delivery is really
good. A friend
of
mine in New Mexico, she told me that I had a very calm voice.
You do. You have a calm voice, Calm and mellifluous, I would say, as well. Yes. So there you go. There's your positive feedback for the day. Don't let those demons in your head tell you what's going on.
All right, we're going to take a break, play some announcements, and then come back with...
So I have some positive news. Let's talk about some positive news.
Let's do some upbeat here.
Yeah, some upbeat. I got some upbeat.
I've got some THC-contaminated pizza from Stoughton. That's a news story. I don't actually have any. That's a story.
You're passing it out at the station?
It's out in the front desk.
That'll teach them all a lesson.
All right. Pay attention, minions, and then we'll be back in a couple minutes. Tell your partner do's and don'ts.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in homebrewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Madison Public Theater and Oracular Studios invite you to their production of The Untold Story of the Collier Brothers, opening October 11th and running through October 26th at the Bartell Theater. Written and directed by Finn Gallagher, this is the inaugural show of the Madison Public Theater. Homer and Langley Collier live in 1930s Harlem and are famous for their hoarding and eccentric tendencies. Newspaper reporters scheme for an interview or even just a photograph of the inside of their brownstone. Homer, the elder brother, hasn't been seen publicly in years. Langley is even rebuilding a Model T Ford in the living room. What's most interesting about this story? It's true. The Collier brothers were real media sensations for many years, until their own tripwires unfortunately got the best of them. Two brothers, 100 tons of junk, and one sensational story. That's The Untold Story of the Collier Brothers, running October 11th through October 26th at the Bartell Theater. More information can be found at thebartelltheater.org. You're listening to WORT Madison.
And we're back. So the Dane County Public Health Department found some apparently THC contaminated pizza from Famous Yeti's Pizza in Stoughton, and they said their news release here is that they urged community members to throw out any pizza they have may have from Famous Yeti's Pizza in Stoughton due to unintentional THC contamination. The contaminated pizza was served on Tuesday through Thursday of this week.
The intentionally contaminated.
We want to be sure anyone who has this pizza on hand throws it away so they don't get sick. If you ate the pizza and are experiencing THC-related symptoms, please contact your health care provider or call 911 if your symptoms worsen. Public Health was alerted to the contamination through Stoughton EMS late yesterday. They reported they had transported multiple people with similar symptoms who all reported eating at Famous Yeti's Pizza. The oil in a container used to make the pizza tested positive for THC. They operate in a shared building with a shared industrial kitchen where many businesses make food and other products. Public health sanitarians are currently investigating the space in conjunction with the police, the Department of Agriculture, Consumer Protection, and a bunch of strange guys with long hair and headbands for some reason. So for some reason they had THC-infused oil at the pizza place.
All right.
And it's called ordering off the menu, I think. But
the biggest scandal I remember many years ago now was, I think it was in Monona, if I'm not mistaken, perhaps Cottage Grove. But it was that there was a pizza place where people were having sex on the table where they made the pizzas.
Oh!
I have a hair in my pizza, and this is a very unusual hair. That was a big deal.
Oh, the extra large. I already had that. Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah.
Sausage or mushroom? Now we're back to Arnold Palmer. Any rate.
Stuffed grass there. Yeah,
right. Hey, birth control could be free for millions, speaking of all things reproductive.
or illegal.
Under a new rule, the White House announced on Monday that it would propose new rules under the Affordable Care Act. And that would require insurers to cover over-the-counter birth control at no cost to patients. And this is an attempt, of course, the Biden White House to expand access to contraception and to cut out-of-cost pockets for it. So the rules would include emergency contraception. It's a newly approved non-prescription birth control pill. It would also cover spermicides and condoms, And they figure, given the reach of the Affordable Care Act, that it would affect about 52 million American women of reproductive age. Yeah.
And, there's also a birth control that is just a picture of Steve Bannon that they show you.
Steve Bannon, my God.
He's getting out of prison pretty soon.
Oh, is he?
I think he was in there for like 4 months or something. But he gets out like on the 29th or something.
Oh, goody.
This month. Just in time for the last week of the election. Yeah. So. Well, here's some good news. Today's the 25th.
Yeah, that's correct.
The 22nd was International Wombat Day.
Oh, heavens above! And we didn't bake a cake.
I know it's been going on for. It's pretty recent. It says it's been taking place since 2005. So that's the 20th anniversary of it.
20 years. Yeah.
A guy named Chris Mabe felt that wombats deserved a day of their own. He loved these species and. October 22nd was chosen to coincide with the spring planting season in Australia.
Oh, okay.
A time when the wombats are particularly active. You know, I'm grading on a curve here as far as active.
Not absolutely dormant. That's what we count as active.
Wombats are nocturnal. And they spend the daylight hours in their burrows. They come out at dusk to feed on grasses, roots, and bark.
Yeah.
And THC pizza. They like that. Yeah. The spring planting season often...
You can't
often
tell when a wombat's high, though. You really can't.
It'd be like telling if a cat was high. My kid asked me the other day. She said, is the cat acting okay?
Yeah.
And it's like...
How do you know?
I don't know. It's acting like a cat. She was worried she was sick or something. And it's like, she's a cat. We'll never know until she... throws up a wombat on the living room floor or something. She found a snake the other day, the cat.
Oh, good. Yeah.
She's this incredible hunter. And somehow a snake got into like my laundry room.
Yeah.
And she hunted it. She didn't kill it. She just played with it.
Well, that's what they all do. Yeah.
She thought it was a great cat toy.
Yeah.
Look, I knocked this around and this string moves.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, on its own. That's a good point. Yeah.
So, anyway, happy belated Wombat Day.
Happy Wombat to you.
See, told you we'd do some nicer
stuff. Happy Wombat to you. Well, okay, so I got another story about reproductive rights. This comes out of the state of Ohio, of course, where there was a voter-approved constitutional amendment that enshrined reproductive rights in their constitution. And the Republicans have been doing everything they possibly can to screw with this. The most far-reaching of Ohio's laws restricting abortion was struck down on Thursday by a county judge. The Hamilton County, that's where Cincinnati is, the Hamilton County Common Pleas Judge Christian Jenkins. Jenkins said that the Republican Attorney General's request to leave most of the law untouched. So the law that they already had on the books, which bans most abortions once cardiac activity is detected, the Attorney General said that he was just going to leave it there despite what the voters had clearly and legally done in terms of protecting the right to of a woman's right to choose. The judge said, no, you can't do that. We've already got it clear what it is that's going on here. Despite the adoption of a broad and strongly worded constitutional amendment, in this case and others, the state of Ohio seeks not to uphold the constitutional protection of abortion rights, but diminish and limit it. This was according to the decision of Judge Jenkins. Of course, it'll be appealed within the state system. But nonetheless, it was basically like calling the Republicans out on, you say you're all about the will of the people. Well, the people have spoken, and now you're trying to worm away from it. And the judge called them out.
About the will of some of the people.
Yeah, the people that count.
Yeah,
we all know that.
But I mean, a lot of these issues, I mean, it's like that. There's often a two-thirds, one-third split.
Yeah.
Like for abortion rights.
Yeah.
For marriage equality,
right.
For environmental issues.
Yeah.
Labor issues. It's often like a 2-to-1 split.
Yeah.
And then they just ignore that.
Yeah.
We have
an oligarchic system of government already. I mean, that's the way they set it up.
Right.
And then we have a plutocratic background to it.
Yeah.
So we have a plutocratic oligarchy. So not a lot of things get done that people want in that.
And then accelerating inequality, too.
Yeah, which is, right.
Because of a lot of part of it's sort of almost the law of nature. I mean, it's like, as I say, like playing Monopoly. The person who gets the most money early
But it's a feedback loop.
It's a feedback loop.
Yeah, exactly.
And but it's also once they get in there, then they change the rules more and more to their advantage.
Once you get your first three billionaires, you're pretty much going to end up with a lot more of them. Because those three billionaires are going to buy everybody and make sure there's more billionaires.
I saw a little map of the legislative, what are a congressional district that one of the congressional districts that cuts through Dallas Fort Worth, and it looked like a cancer cell. I mean, it was just meandering all over the place. Just it's like, oh, here's a little loop. Oh, here's a little bump we're gonna put on here, and it was incredible. I know they did that in Austin too.
Yeah.
They carved up Austin into like seven or
like
something.
Pies, little pie slices, and then they attached each little slice to like some you know scrub country on the border of the city. Hey, so again, we're trying to do positive news. So
yes.
I just want to mention that in the battle of the billionaires, in the battle of the plutocrats, apparently Kamala has support from Bill Gates. I don't know if you heard that this week.
Yeah, he said he was going to.
And someone else that was kind of surprising, the chief executive of J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon. Now, he's been keeping his support for the vice president kind of on the DL because, of course, he doesn't want to annoy Trump because Trump is notably vindictive. And if he becomes president, we'll have a lot of ability to screw things over. But it's managed to sort of leak out. And he's usually pretty outspoken, but he's been very vague recently. And he even said he was sort of leaving the door open maybe to supporting Trump. But in private, he's made it pretty clear he's not supporting Trump.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, the only reason the money people would support Trump is to use him.
Yeah.
I mean, but he also has the monkey with the hand grenade kind of thing. It's like, do you really want him to destroy the economy?
Yeah, I mean
you're a billionaire now. You're making lots of money, hand over fist. Yeah. Do you want to screw that up?
These billionaires only believe in creative destruction until they get in charge, just like everybody believes in free enterprise until they create their first monopoly, right?
Yeah.
So they should be worried about this because he's going to screw them. I mean, look at capitalism in Russia. Look at capitalism in Hungary. If you're not in with the big guys, you're going to get screwed, basically, if you're not in with the leader.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that could go from one place to another. I mean, you know, Trump loves tariffs, and I don't think there's a single one of these guys that love tariffs.
Yeah, so... He's so incredibly stupid when he talks about those. I mean, I hate to be disrespectful.
Yeah, but, yeah, I know you do. It's the worst thing you can do.
But he thinks it's free money. And,
yeah.
I mean, he even had something, another little Truth Social post or whatever today, you know, kind of pushing back because the Harris people have wisely started calling it a national sales tax.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's pushed back. No, it's not that. The other countries are going to pay this. It's free money.
Mexico's going to build the wall.
Yeah,
too.
It's like, and it's not going to affect our consumers at all.
That's why they had to spend billions to float the farmers the last time he was president.
Yeah, so. I'm out in the country a lot, and then a lot of the farmers have Trump signs up, and I really want those people to take 10 minutes, look up the actual text of Project 2025, and they have a section on the farm, farm policy. Read that, and then go vote for Trump.
Because, I mean... you mean the screw the farmer section?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I actually read it this week. And, you know, they couch it. They kind of say, well, we need to...
I'm in awe of you. You actually read it.
I did. Well, I was tired of reading news articles about it. And I, you know, they try to make it sound reasonable. And it's like, you know, we need to shift this emphasis here and move, you know, and put resources. But, I mean, really what they're looking at is getting rid of... I mean, they start talking about what used to be called the set-aside program. I don't know. That's got a different name now, but where you pay farmers to not grow.
Keep the market stable, basically. Yeah.
And they want to get rid of that, which is, you know, that's kind of low-hanging fruit. Everybody hates, you know, everybody who's not a farmer thinks that's stupid.
Or doesn't understand it. Agricultural economics.
Well, that's the other thing. But then they want to get rid of the subsidies. They want to phase those out and just, you know, let the free market, you know, determine. But then they also want to get rid of things like marketing that the USDA does for the farmers. They want to, you know, any kind of like the agricultural research, things like that. You know, anything that, that looks like socialism, you know. And I mean, a lot of our agriculture today is because of the research people have done over the years. You know, and you can talk about the harm it does. I mean, I'm not, you know, ignoring that, but I mean, it's successful as a business. And it's because of a lot of that type of research and the partnership with the but then they really hit high gear when they start talking about food stamps.
Yeah.
They wanna the SNAP program. I've worked for the state here when they implemented W-2, and it sounds a lot like that, where they don't come right out and say, I want to get rid of these.
Yeah.
They say, well, we need to have, you know, restrictions on this. We need to have work requirements here. We need to have, you know, tougher standards. They make it so hard to qualify that nobody bothers because it's not worth the effort anymore. So,
well, you know, the idea that they want the agriculture department out of the business of agricultural economics, that doesn't surprise me. But the bizarreness of this is, I mean, I know a lot about the bureaucratic history of the United States. When the Republican Party created the Department of Agriculture back in the late 19th century, it was all about agricultural education and agricultural experimentation. They had different bureaus for entomology and plants and forests. And I mean, the whole idea was it was to provide people in that sector of the economy with the information they needed to be successful. The idea that they'd be against that just seems beyond belief to me.
So,
I mean, that's like we keep asking that, like, how far back are they going to go in the time machine? Well, 1880, apparently, because that's when they started doing this stuff in the Department of Agriculture under Republican presidents, you know, so whatever.
Well, it's probably like the Weather Service. They think they could privatize that. And
that was originally part of the War Department, and then they made it because obviously for obvious reasons, but then they eventually put it in the Agriculture Department for that very reason, because, you know, obviously farmers need to know what the weather was going to be. We've been telling people what the weather's going to be again since the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so
we'll have no more of that.
We'll have no more of that. It's like, what is it that you guys are actually asking for? Because it's insane.
And what? Why do you think this is going to get? Why was this going to make things better?
Because it's the absolutely restless, you know, relentless invasion of market principles into every aspect of existence. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Because they'll think it'll be privatized, and then somebody can make money off of doing that.
Right.
I mean, that's why they want the money from the education.
That's why
they want the money from health. That's why they want Social Security to be privatized. They have to have greedy, crazy people have their little fingers over on everything.
Yeah.
And that's only then can we live our truest lives.
Okay. So
they're fanatics.
My takeaway, fanatics. Farmers, take 15 minutes and read that little chapter on farm policy. So.
Good recommendation.
New Zealand airport limits drop-off hugs to 3 minutes.
My family wouldn't stand for like 20 seconds.
I have to touch them? it's a Dunedin Airport in South Island of New Zealand. It's a heated discussion.
Is it Dunedin?
Dunedin, yeah.
Dunedin. Yeah,
Dunedin. What it looks like.
Yeah,
so, it's a 3-minute limit on hugs in its drop-off zone. It suggests for fonder farewells, please.
Fondle farewells.
Please use the car park. That's I could do that under 3 minutes. The airport's decision has drawn mixed reactions on social media, like everything else does. The world. Some users expressed outrage over the restriction on cuddles, where others were surprised the airport still offers a free drop-off area.
What? There's a free drop-off area?
So 3 minutes or less and you can use the drop-off area. But
so here's some more some positive news here. I thought this was positive. The Hollywood company behind Blade Runner 2049 has just sued Elon Musk for copyright infringement.
Really?
Yep. They accused him of illegally using imagery from that film, which I never saw, by the way, to promote Tesla's new robo-taxi.
Oh, my goodness.
And the name of the company is Alcon Entertainment. And they filed suit in U.S. District Court in L.A., And they named Tesla and Warner Brothers Discovery as defendants, saying that that Alcon had denied a request by Mr. Musk and the companies to use imagery, but they went ahead and did it anyway. So that would be nice if he were sued yet again.
We're kind of in that age of I'm going to do this until somebody can stop me.
Yeah,
you know
that's the whole guardrail thing.
And not just like send me a cease and desist or even file a lawsuit, but really make me, you know, hurt, which pretty much never happens. So
can I sort of end on something? I mean, we're getting towards the end. I just want to make sure I get this in. So, you know, every day, you may not know this about me, every single day.
You eat broccoli.
I eat broccoli. You knew this already. Every day I eat raw broccoli.
Oh, is that it? Is that what
And I love raw broccoli. I just love broccoli, period.
Three minutes or less of hugging the broccoli. Kick your ass out of over into the
the broccoli car loving park. Zone. Yeah, I got to go to the car park with my broccoli florette. No, it's I saw this amazing article talking about all the health benefits. It has cancer fighting compounds in it. That's why it smells bad, by the way. It's got some sort of sulfuric smell to it. It's got a cancer fighting compound in it. It's good for your heart. It's vitamin K in broccoli is good for blood circulation and blood clotting. It also contains a lot of potassium, which can help lower your blood pressure. It's high in fiber, which can lower your bad cholesterol. I don't have any problems with any of those things. They could also benefit your bones. It turns out that the vitamin plays a key role in activating several of the proteins that form bones and keep them strong. And I just want to let you know, now I eat raw broccoli. That's not something that everybody can do without a lot of flatulence, by the way. I don't have that problem, but just that could be a problem for you.
That's what you say.
I did when I first started eating raw broccoli, my system got used to
stuff like that.
Yeah. But what you want to do if you cook it, it's don't boil it or overcook it because you won't get any of the nutritional value.
Yeah.
So just basically kind of like steam it a little
real
bit.
Real quick.
And just to make it light enough and tasty enough.
Yeah.
And that should be enough. Yeah. But broccoli, I'm here to sing the praises of broccoli.
And then put the nacho cheese over it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
The important ingredient. Yeah. I should mention our mascot, Clopsy's here today.
He's
sitting quietly at my feet the whole show.
Clopsy is such a wonderful dog.
How you doing? So, he's keeping us company today. So, the James Webb Telescope has spotted a steam world.
Really?
Get a
steampunk world.
Switch. I'm not. How do you say it? What's the Jewish word for the
spritz?
Spritz, is that it? I couldn't think of it. So, it's an exoplanet, of course. It's going full steam ahead. It has an atmosphere composed almost completely of hot water molecules.
Oh, wow.
We're using the term steam world, says the astronomer from, they're from.
Astronauts have to wear towels.
University of Michigan.
Speaking of towels.
and you can only stay there 15 minutes.
Exactly. Get kind of wrinkly otherwise.
Oh,
did you bring us a present?
What'd you bring us?
Nuggets.
Nuggets.
All right.
So. And a bubbler.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
So they've thought that such steam worlds that had existed, they predicted this, but this is the first observation of one that they actually found.
Excellent.
And the astronomer says, "I feel like a Star Trek explorer." Mm-hmm. I'm sure you do. And the
steam world. Nothing but steam world.
See, Star Trek couldn't go there because Kirk's toupee would melt.
It'd slide right down the back of his neck. I saw some Star Trek AI. I'm not a big fan of AI animation, but I saw some Star Trek AI that had them like dancing in go-go boots and stuff that I just adored. I found online, and there's a company that just keeps or group that keeps churning this stuff out. And everything is it's very strangely very 50s or early 60s looking, you know, hairdos and stuff like that. And they're all doing kind of like almost like beach blanket bingo type stuff. You know, there's one with Elvis. There's an Elvis wearing a Trek shirt and stuff like that.
Planet Elvis,
exactly.
What else we got here? We've got about a minute left.
So Halloween is coming up. Are you doing anything for Halloween? I'm not a very pro Halloween.
I gotta get
kind
some
person.
Razor blades. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Thanks for the reminder.
It's a huge business. And I was talking to a friend about how it seems so excessive to me. I don't understand why it became such a thing. And this friend of mine said, you know what? I say let it absorb all the crazy commercial stuff because at least that means Thanksgiving is safe. Because Thanksgiving is the perfect holiday. You get together with people and you eat. You don't have to buy anybody anything. It's very low expectations. And it makes some sense. You're thankful, for
it's pretty
low-key. Nice.
Yeah.
And so he's like, let Halloween and Christmas, absorb all the crazy American energy, and then Thanksgiving can be just nice and friendly, and you can watch football and talk to your friends and have something to eat, and that's a holiday. That's a holiday.
Yeah. So. All right, we got to get out of here. Time to declare the weekend.
Yep.
Enjoy your weekend.
You bet.
That's an order.
I shall.
We're watching, too. Let me tell you. So. All right. Pants, was great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Have a great week, everybody. Stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar? Then Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues Cruise, Friday on My Mind. All kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. And you are listening to WORT, 89.9 FM, Madison. It's 2 o'clock, and hang on, here comes the Kiosk. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Get down.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, October 25th.
This is Bird Note. The white-throated sparrow's melancholy whistle is hauntingly beautiful. Some birders remember the syllables of the tune as Old Sam Peabody, Peabody, Peabody. But when you hear an adult sparrow performing, just know that the bird wasn't always an expert singer. In the fall, listen for white-throated sparrows rehearsing their song. Inexperienced young birds, hatched during the preceding summer months, sometimes begin with disorganized jumbles of notes, known as subsongs. As winter deepens, the first-year birds begin to get the syllables of their songs down, but they might sound shaky and off-key. Any musician knows that sometimes you have to mess up over and over until you get it just right. In the spring, you might hear some overexcited hiccups. But by summer, hopefully, all the